this book by Marjorie Williams, I think, strikes a chord with many of us. I read it first as an adult, and I couldn't help but think, where's this book been all my life? If you haven't either read the book or have read it and need a refresher, I have a copy, and Lori Dynas has three copies that we'd be glad to share with you. Although the book was probably targeted for a young audience, the story of the rabbit is one that all of us can relate to as we undertake our own journey toward authenticity. When Deborah Smith called me and asked if I wanted to do a summer service, I said yes, and then told her that I had three topics in mind. One was UU clapping lessons, and another was paintings and pennies. The third topic, which was ultimately the one I chose, was the Velveteen Minister. Thank you. There was a bit of silence, and then Deborah said, these aren't exactly her words, but they're close, that wouldn't be a sermon to disparage anybody, would it? I can understand the question, and I could and can laugh about it, because disparagement would be the very opposite of what I would want. I've been a UU with varying degrees of involvement for over 30 years. At one time, I seriously considered being a UU minister and talked to the Reverend Alan Deal about that possibility. He was encouraging, but he also pointed out that the work I did with the poor was a type of ministry. I never pursued that particular dream, although I have pieced together a sort of ministry that, although it doesn't come close to being an official UU minister, suits me well. I hadn't particularly thought of it that way until a friend of mine pointed it out when I was in Oregon last year to perform a wedding. As an aside, when I first attended BOOF, I expected the worst and hoped for the best. Remember, I'd been a UU for over 30 years. And the best was what I got. I have tremendous admiration and respect for Elizabeth and this congregation. After one particularly moving service one Sunday, I told Elizabeth, I used to want to be a UU minister, but I've decided it's just easier to watch you do it. Though I didn't go to Star King, I have continued my spiritual quest. Early in the 80s, Alan Deal led a book study group on Ascent of the Mountain, Flight of the Dove. For me, that somewhat describes my journey. Some things I've had to work for, and some enlightenment came with little or no work. I attended classes at First UU in Portland. I raised a daughter, and this can be seen as a trip in itself, those of you with children could agree. I continued on my job with Adult and Family Services. I worked with people in both urban and rural areas, people of different colors, people with different lifestyles, religion, and of course, people of different economic status. After I retired from the state of Oregon, I went through a series of emotionally draining circumstances, and after deciding that the universe was really trying to tell me something, I enrolled at a school in Oakland that was established and run by Matthew Fox. I was living in Roseburg and went down to Oakland about 28 different weekends before I received my master's degree. Travel there was either the Green Tortoise, which is an alternative bus, car, train, or plane. The Green Tortoise was an experience in itself, and I treasure the experiences I had on it. The master's program was never intended to be job training, though there was an emphasis on designing your own life and vocation. And this is what I got when I graduated. So it's every graduating class had their own stole. Ministries, formal and informal, have continued to fascinate me. We live in Nampa, and we have many visits from Jehovah's Witnesses and LDS missionaries. A lot of people dislike having religious visitors come to the door, but I rather like it. I usually invite them in and offer them water or whatever, and I tell them straight away that I'm a Unitarian Universalist. They always say they don't know what it is. So I guide them over to the poster of the seven principles we have prominently hung in our living room. I really enjoy the LDS missionaries who are always well-mannered and polite young men. And they really are. They're very sweet, I have to say. I figure that if I had a son or a daughter who was who knows where, that I would hope that someone would be kind to them. If at some future time one of them decides to question his faith, maybe he'll remember our principles. And if he doesn't, well, what's the harm, right? Now, I've noticed lately that, that when the missionaries are in our neighborhood, they no longer stop at our house. Now, Charles says this is a coincidence, and I really don't believe that. I think they have our number. That's what I think. One of the Jehovah's Witnesses who comes by is a woman who is just a few years younger than I am. And eventually we had to agree to disagree, and she truly is less than impressed by our principles. In fact, it got pretty heated. That's when we decided to agree to disagree. In a way, I really have to admire. She is very bright, has a successful business, and is convinced that Armageddon is near. She believes it is her responsibility to save as many people as possible. This is her ministry. Almost every day, she is out knocking on doors and talking to people. Hopefully for her, people that she has had more success with than she did with me. If she only has an hour or two to spend, that's what she spends. I would never question her dedication. I've contemplated what it'd be like to go to door telling people about Unitarian Universalism, and I've not quite been able to wrap my mind around it. I mentioned that to her, and she said, "But Sharon, I meet a lot of really nice people like you." I may not agree with her, but I do respect her. You may not know it, but not only do the Witnesses not pledge allegiance to the flag, they don't pledge money to their congregations. And as a person who has worked on pledge campaigns, I find this totally mind-boggling. All of their operating expenses come from donations. People who have never set foot inside a Kingdom Hall donate thousands of dollars. The Witnesses are heirs to many estates of non-members. They do not go into debt to buy their meeting places. Now, their Kingdom Halls, is what they're called, are uniform with no windows. Their national headquarters, by thousands of yards, say, of the same floor covering, and the congregations are able to obtain it at cost. The same goes for all the building materials, paints, and etc. I'm not suggesting this is what we ought to do. It's just an idea that it's worth looking at before we reject anything. I want to turn to another ministry for a second. Joel Osteen is a co-minister with his wife at their huge church in Houston, Texas. Their facility used to be a sports arena, but it's now where 40,000 people attend every Sunday. I think it's 45,000. when they take their collection, and I've seen this on like YouTube or whatever on TV, they pass actual buckets. So they are getting buckets of money. Now, you may have seen the old televangelist who would encourage people to send their last $100 to them. Well, first of all, Joel Osteen doesn't make mention of any money when he's doing a television type event. He does ask attendees, but he just doesn't do it. Well, he's on television, so it's not the same as the old televangelist. What strikes me about Osteen is that he seems absolutely sincere, and he wants you to know that God loves you. The Mormons, the Jehovah's Witnesses, and Joel Osteen have different ministries from each other, and definitely from us as UUs. I'm not advocating for anyone other than UUs. That's who I'm advocating for here, not the other guys, but believe other groups may have a way of doing things that could possibly benefit us. It doesn't harm us, just look. What we might not consider is that we have different ministries right here in our congregation. I think of Rick Roth and Bessie Labuddy as two people approaching UU sainthood. I know there are others who help in the community, and I leave them out just because I don't know about them or the inadequacies of my own memory, which is pretty inadequate sometimes. I think of the work Jay and Carol Wechselberger have done, including Chalice Circles, Sunday Services Committee, the Labyrinth, and goodness knows what else. I think of Kathy Carmen and Karen Race and their work with RE. I think of RE, Angie Tate, and the RE committee. I think of past and present congregational care team members. Two of my own personal nominees for sainthood are Mary Osterman and Charlotte Tompkins. I think of Bob Huntley and all of his efforts for the future of our fellowship. In our own journeys toward being real, I see many similarities to the Velveteen Rabbit. We come into the world all dressed up in our birthday suits. People in ooh and awe over us and admire our newness. We have our sorrows and our scrapes. Sometimes we are naturally shy. After all, the other toys have been around a lot longer than we have. Sometimes others are more modern and up to date, and some have airs. We are scared and get tossed aside. Then sometimes serendipitous happens, and we are spared from being burned, as was to be the fate of the rabbit. And sometimes we have a transformation, such as the Velveteen Rabbit did, and become real. And we have our ministries. Now, sometimes I feel bad because I don't do more than I do. And, you know, sometimes great minds think alike. So this morning, the contemplation we did was also one I had included in this talk. So it's so good, we're going to do it twice. And it's number 457 in your hymnal. I'm going to read a line, and then I would like for you to repeat it after me. Everybody, I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do.